Welcome to Multimedia Security. We have three meetings left, counting also today as one. So today I'm going to talk about resampling. Next time about JPEG methods, and then in our last meeting about physics-based methods. I've sort of finalized the syllabus here, so I slightly modified that syllabus to be really like up to date. Okay, so today we're going to talk about detection of resampling. Next time about detection methods that exploit particularities of the JPEG format. Then I'm traveling, so lecture is canceled. And then in the last week, we talk about physics-based methods. With respect to the exercises, I'm not going to publish another worksheet beyond what is already uploaded there. Hold on. Sorry. So we have, I think, five or so. Yes, we have five worksheets there. The last worksheet, I put it online last week. It's on camera identification using sensor noise. Yeah. Okay. Good. So please have a look at that. For the exercises, I will be out of town this week and next week. Yeah. So the exercises are canceled on Thursday, January 18th, I think. Yes. And January 25th. Yeah. So that means we have two more opportunities to, or where I can help you with the exercises. Of course, you're also free to do it completely on your own. Yeah, no problem. Okay. But I want you to demonstrate your solution to me eventually. Good. Today's topic, resampling detection. I've put two papers online. So one is an old paper or the original paper that brought up the whole topic by Popescu and Farid. And the other one is a quite interesting paper by a researcher. The name is Matthias Kirchner. And he wrote a paper with a number of corrections and additions to the Popescu-Farid approach. So let's get started with the Popescu and Farid paper. A quick look at the authors. So Hani Farid is one of the most innovative researchers in the field of image forensics. In contrast to Jessica Friedrich, his background is not math or signal processing, but he's a computer vision, computer graphics expert. And so the type of work that he does is quite different from the type of work that Jessica Friedrich does. He had a lot of great ideas. He brought a lot of great ideas to the field that were also really novel. And he founded sort of a lot of research directions within image forensics, like, for example, also detection of resampling. So first of all, why is detection of resampling a relevant problem? So detection of traces of resampling. So resampling is a specific operation that is done internally, for example, in image processing software, that is done internally when rotating or scaling an image area. So resampling is the algorithmic realization of scaling or rotation. And that means if we are able to detect traces of resampling, that's a potentially powerful tool, because if we think of spliced images, so images that are composed from multiple sources, then it is very likely that we have to rotate or scale one of the image components to fit them into the host image. And detecting resampling is very interesting for actually detecting spliced images. So a spliced image is an image that has been copied together from several sources. Yeah. So these are like montages. And here's the basic idea. It turned out the idea is a little bit not so perfectly exploited, but okay, this was a first shot. Here's a first attempt to detect resampling. So they start off with, okay, how can we actually model resampling? Okay. So let's say, is that readable? So let's say we resample a signal, like we scale, for example, a signal by a factor of P over Q. For example, if we double the size, P would correspond to 2, Q would correspond to 1. But it could also be something more complicated, like decreasing the size to 3/4 or so, then P would correspond to 3, Q to 4, something like this. Okay, so let's make that assumption. Then it can be implemented like this, that first, or it can be modeled like this, that we say, okay, first We have an upsampling step. So we take the original signal X with M samples, and we need to create P times more samples. So we upsample the signal and fill it up with a lot of zeros in between. So that's a first step shown here. So we take the signal, we upsample it. Now we have a lot of zeros in between. Then we do an interpolation step to fill the space, like to remove the zeros and to fill the space between two of these samples. That's here step two, an interpolation, which we can consider as a convolution with a filter. And then we have a signal of length P times original signal. And then we need to divide by Q. So that's a downsampling step. So we take only every Q's entry of that interpolated signal, and that gives us the final signal. Yeah? So that is not how it is actually implemented in software, because it would take a lot of storage and it would take a lot of computational time to do that convolution, like the upsampling step, if you have factors that are a little bit unfriendly. But from a mathematical perspective, it's a valid approach to model it like this. Yeah. And if we have, here's a remark, different types of resampling algorithms, like linear resampling, cubic resampling, results in different interpolation kernels here, effectively. Yeah, so that is what is happening. Yeah? But in principle, we can think of it as a linear system. Hmm? We have the upsampling, interpolation, downsampling. And let me zoom out a little bit. For example, here, for the case of interpolate, so like a scaling by a factor of 4/3, we can express this as a matrix multiplication, where we multiply the original signal by that matrix. And what is the content of that matrix? These are essentially the interpolation weights. Yeah. So if I have an upsampling factor of 4/3, what does that mean? That means that for three, hold on, for three input values, I create four. Yeah. So out of three input values, I create four values. And then the next three values again become a package of four new values. Yeah. All right. So that's an upsampling. It's an example. Upsampling by a factor of 4/3. Yeah. And if we think of a linear interpolation, yeah, what weights can we choose? First of all, we can say, okay, the first entry is we just keep it identical. Yeah, so here we have an interpolation weight of 1, and we don't consider the other input signals. Yeah, good. And then the remaining three values, they have to be created in a way such that we have, if we again use the interpolation weight one here, that we have this space here equidistantly distributed. Yeah? So these distances should all be identical, yeah? To have a linear interpolation. So now let's think a little bit. So here we have to squeeze in three boxes. Here we only have to squeeze in two boxes. Yeah? So these distances, they are a little bit larger than those distances. Yeah? And what we end up having is that this value here becomes a combination of this and this value. This value becomes a combination of those two values, and this value becomes a combination of those two values. Yeah? And in this particular case, the interpolation weights would be like this, would sit exactly in the middle between those two, so it would be 0.5, 0.5. And this, I forgot the numbers, what was in that matrix? Okay, we could calculate it. I think it was 0.25 and 0.75, something like this. So the closer we are to an actual box, the higher is the weight. Yeah, so that's then also 0.75, 0.25, something like this. Yeah, so that's just an example for a linear interpolation. Yeah, the values are okay, right? And the idea is, so the idea or the motivation how to detect the traces of resampling is to estimate for, like to try to estimate for interpolated regions such an interpolation matrix. Yeah, so that's the motivation here. So motivation. Okay. Idea number one or observation number one. Observation, resampling can be expressed, or resampling interpolation, sorry, can be expressed as a matrix multiplication. So the resampled signal equals some input signal X multiplied by a matrix A, where A contains the interpolation weights. Now, if we try to, if we turn that around, so like here in equation two, sorry, C equation two in Popescu and Farid. Okay, now the idea is, if we knew what pixels were part of an interpolated region, wouldn't we be able to estimate such a weight matrix and use that to detect the actual interpolation? So that's the second thing. So let us simultaneously estimate the matrix A and the pixels or the area to which it corresponds. That may sound a little bit like a miracle, but that would actually give us, so this should highlight then highlight the resampled area. This is not really readable that way, right? Okay. Okay. So let's assume we knew which area would have been subject to resampling, or maybe we have a guess or so. Yeah, we have a suspicious area, so we can mark it. Yeah. How could we check whether a matrix A is actually like a resampling matrix for the respective pixels? So what we can actually do is that we say the matrix describes a linear dependency between neighboring pixels, and we can check for that linear dependency. Yeah? So if we have in our matrix entries, like this pixel is to 0.25, or let's say to 25% consists of this pixel, and to 75% consists of this pixel, and if we know that this pixel consists to 50% of this pixel and to 50% of that pixel, then those two pixels are correlated effectively. Yeah? So that is the idea. Yeah? While this pixel here, it's not correlated to anyone because we just took, it's a little bit correlated to that neighbor, but much more weakly because it's mostly a direct copy of itself. Yeah? Okay. So if we can detect a correlation between these pixels, then we would know that we have such a resampled area. Now, so the way to estimate simultaneously the area which could be resampled and this interpolation matrix A, that is a little bit complicated, or could be complicated, but in pattern recognition, there is actually like almost a standard tool to perform this task, and it's called the expectation maximization algorithm. So the expectation maximization algorithm allows to simultaneously, or it's an iterative procedure. In one step, you estimate, what region could fit to my model? And in the next step, you improve your model from that region. That's expectation maximization. Yeah? So the expectation maximization algorithm allows to simultaneously estimate let's say the region, I'll bring another sentence then. The region of support for the interpolation kernel or interpolation matrix and the matrix itself. So let me write this down. I think that was the first time that I saw something very practical and useful being done with the expectation maximization algorithm. And then I was like, ah, that's how it works. Unfortunately, then Kirchner writes in his paper that this is all unnecessary and wrong anyways from a signal processing perspective. But we come to that later.
So should we remember the expectation maximization algorithm, for example, or just the personal view of it?
No, I think it's, yeah. Good question.
Personally, I like expectation maximization.
It's, yeah.
Nice article on Wikipedia, which shows the iterative steps. So.
And also here, it's beautiful. It makes a lot of sense. It also made a lot of sense to a lot of people until Matthias Kirchner wrote his other paper, and then it was, naja, okay. Okay, so we have the expectation step and the maximization step in the EM algorithm. It's an iterative procedure, yeah? Expectation and maximization. Where's the equation? Okay, it starts with maximization, but it doesn't matter. It's iterative. Yeah? So expectation says, or let's jointly look at it and then write it down. So here's even like a pseudocode for the detection approach given, yeah? So it starts with the maximization step, but okay, so maximization is the model fitting. So let's say we have an area and we would like to estimate a matrix that linearly interpolates, like that expresses the linear interpolation between the neighbors, yeah? Actually, this region where it belongs to, it's not a binary matrix, but every pixel gets an associated weight, yeah, like a percentage to which, like how good it matches the model, yeah, how much, like for each pixel, we have a number that expresses how likely it is that it has been interpolated from its neighbors with that matrix A. Yeah, and these weights are here stored in that weighting matrix W. And Maximization is model fitting, so we compute a new standard deviation. We have a Gaussian model essentially. So we estimate a new standard deviation and new matrix entries alpha. So these are the individual entries in the matrix in that notation from essentially hold on, this comes from the other side. So essentially we take the observations, weight it with the degree of membership of that pixel to that respective model, and then and then take the linear relationship between that pixel and its neighbors to update the matrix. And then in the next step, where's our estimation? Hold on. No, the I was confused. W is a residual, probably already. No, where is it? Alright, I see. We have to take it a little bit more slowly. Let's have a look at let's have a longer look at the equations and then we can solve this. Okay, so so we essentially talked about equation 4. So we can say we have an interpolation, for example, with weight 0.5 between two neighbors. So we add those two neighbors up and that gives us the observation y. Yeah. Okay. And then if we like to generalize this a little bit, so consider now resampling a signal by an arbitrary amount P over Q. So that's our scaling factor. In this case, we first ask when is the ith sample of a resampled signal equal to a linear combination of its two n neighbors. That is, we make that observation y, and we know that it's a linear combination of its neighbors, where alpha k are scalar weights, and alpha 0 equals 0. Reordering terms and rewriting the above constraints in terms of the resampling matrix yields. Okay, so that's gonna give us the update equation, but it doesn't explain the W. Anyways, implementation-wise, the W is, although I can't locate the equation right now, the W is fairly easy because you take a pixel and compute the, like you try to interpolate a pixel from its neighbors and you take the residual error as 1 over W. Yeah. So the prediction error is the degree of plausibility for that model for the pixel. Yeah. So prediction, so we have So we have a weight W that describes the degree of agreement of current pixel with the estimated interpolation weights alpha I. Yeah. Okay, and this agreement we can, so this is computed as the residual error. So we take a number of pixels y. We can think this in 1D or in 2D, like a neighborhood of points y, and we multiply it by that matrix A, and that gives us a predicted value. Let's say V. Yeah? So that is a predicted value. So, or, yeah. So V X is a prediction at position X. And now what we can do is that we say W equals 1 over the difference Vx minus, yeah, the original input signal at position X, something like this. Yeah. So the weight W expresses the agreement between prediction and actual pixel. I was writing this equation from the top of my head. I have to take a little bit more time in the paper to actually locate that position.
Yeah, you're skipping every second page.
Seriously? That could explain why the equation is gone. Oh, yeah. Great. That helps. That really helps. Sorry? Aha, and here we also see the remainder of the algorithm. Yeah, okay. So let's have a look at W, since we found these pages already. Let me change this. Oh, that was unfriendly. Aha. Okay, here we go. Thank you. Actually, I also have a printout of that paper. Maybe I should have used it. Ah, yeah, here's that equation that I wanted to write down. Okay, good. Good, good. Let's have a look at the real proposed residual first. No? So it's here. No? We have so a residual at position I is the actual observed pixel at position I minus the prediction, so an interpolation of the neighbors using our matrix weights, our matrix entries. Yeah. So that difference is the residual. So it's not an L2 norm, it's just an absolute value. Okay. And then okay, it's a little bit smoothed, and then it is plugged into, this is essentially a Gaussian here, a Gaussian equation. Yeah, it's plugged into that Gaussian and becomes that weight. And we can look at the equations that we fortunately found now in a minute. Yeah. Okay. So that says the more, like the smaller my residual is, like the closer my prediction is to the actual observation, the more important is this pixel to further improve my model. Yeah. So it's an iterative procedure where I select a number of pixels that appear to fit well to my model. And with that selection, I re-estimate the model to further improve it. And then I re-estimate what pixels belong to that model. So that is the expectation maximization iteration. And I let it run until, well, some until nothing changes anymore. So it's kind of convergence. Good. And then, okay, and then here in this equation, new weights alpha are estimated. But now with the full paper here, we can look at the mathematical equations. So, so here's a probabilistic formulation for the membership. So we can say we have a set M1 that is pixels that are interpolated with these weights, yeah. And so we have the probability that the current pixel yi belongs to that area given the observations, and that equals, and that's now essentially this type of probabilistic Bayesian modeling that we oftentimes do in pattern recognition and pattern analysis. So we have the probability of yi given that yi is that this pixel belongs to a resampled area. Yeah? So the probability of observing this pixel, if we knew that it is from a resampled area, multiplied by the probability, like the prior probability that that pixel is, or any pixel at all, is from a resampled area, divided over, and now we have like the sum over all potential events that can happen. So the probability of observing yi, given that yi is from a resampled area, the second time we have the counter event, the probability for observing yi if yi is not from a resampled area. Yeah? Okay, good. Now the question is, how can we calculate this? And the model is that. So we can say the probability, so given that this pixel is resampled, Yeah. What is the probability of observing that very intensity? And then we can say, okay, in that case, we make that prediction, and that prediction compared to the actual pixel is almost identical. Yeah. So that means yi minus the interpolation equals zero. If that equals zero in this Gaussian expression here, we get a maximum value of one. Yeah. So if our prediction exactly matches, we get a one. So that's the maximum value here. If our prediction is infinitely far off, we get a zero. Yeah. So this is indeed a probability that ranges between zero and one and expresses the likelihood for yi being interpolated with those weights from the neighboring pixels. Yeah. And then the update for the weights that is shown here. So first of all, the correct expression for the weights is that we say, okay, we essentially have the same type of expression. Yeah. Again, we compare a pixel to the interpolation of its neighbors. This time we weight each pixel by the probability that it is actually resampled, so that is relevant for our model. Yeah. And if we get a large error here, this time we interpret this equation as, okay, if we have a large error here, this means we have to improve our weights alpha. Yeah. So that is the step where the maximization step where we improve our model, so the weights alpha. And how can we find out, how can we improve on these weights alpha? Well, we have here a quadratic expression. This means we can compute the derivative and maximize that, which is then in matrix notation written here in this equation 13. So yeah, it's been a while that I went through that math, but it's actually valid. Okay, so that is the expectation maximization algorithm. In Kirchner's paper, we will read that this all is total overkill and it's neglecting a couple of things. But still, it's a very nice model, yeah. And if we look at the results, it actually kind of works. I also have own images actually with results here. Let me look for those. It's maybe more impressive than. No, where do I have this? Let me check. Not here. not here, then it must be here. Yeah. Yeah. It's so sometimes it really has marvelous results. No? Sorry, the slides are in German and they were for something else. But here's an example. Yeah, can you see the input image? Hold on, let me make the Windows full screen. And then yeah. So here the input image is okay, a man and his dog and some urban environment. Yeah. And all that is visualized here is that after we estimated these, like we let the expectation maximization run for a while, and then eventually we obtain a matrix A, and then we do one more pass through the image and evaluate these residuals. So essentially this degree of membership of a pixel W here, or for each pixel, like how well does the matrix model the relationship of this pixel to its neighbors, yeah, and translate this to a grayscale image, yeah, and then we see here, for example, it's not really explicable why the man and the dog suddenly have such a different like agreement to the matrix that we found as opposed to the background here. Here's another example. That's a nice one that, yeah, could be visible on the beamer. So, I mean, apparently this must be an artificial image, sure. But let me make this a little bit darker. So here is so interesting. Like you can see some artificial streaks here in this residual image, which is maybe an artifact of an image of the image processing program or rendering program or so that was used to create that picture. And here's a particularly nice case. where actually it's not so clear to me what all has been done with this image, but if we give it a couple of minutes to look at it, yeah, then what we can see is that the background here is like unstructured. No, so there's some unstructured noise there, and here on these areas we have some grid-like pattern. Yeah, these grid patterns can be direct traces of interpolation. That is how Farid and so on motivates it. Or this can be artifacts that we actually look, for example, at a JPEG grid, artifacts from JPEG grids that have been resampled or so, for example, no? Could be the case. The interesting thing is that the grid patterns in all these three components here have different periodicities, yeah? So it's likely that these three components have been individually rescaled. And then, of course, we have here these very notable structures here, which also certainly are not from normal descent. Yeah. So in that sense, although from a theoretical perspective, the method has a couple of problems, and we will talk about that. It produces meaningful results. Sometimes, at least, yeah. It's fragile to JPEG compression. JPEG compression is very harmful. That's a limitation of the method. Another limitation of any resampling detection method is that they cannot deal with very strong downsampling, and that is because too much information is lost then, and it can't be detected anymore. But other than that, it oftentimes brings results, no? And let me go back to the paper by Popescu and Farid. So they argue, okay, now if I have different degrees of rotation or different degrees of scaling, then periodicities of different frequencies are introduced in what they call the P-map. So these residuals that quantify the interpolation error. And then, so if I take this this map of residuals and compute a Fourier transform on that, then I obtain peaks, barely visible peaks. Here, now it's better probably. I produce peaks at the locations where these these dominant frequencies of these periodicities occur. Yeah. Okay. So and then I think the authors had the impression, okay, we should offer something how these traces of interpolation can automatically be detected. And there they just said, okay, you know, what I could do is that I create these patterns in Fourier space in a brute force manner, like I scale an image by a lot of different factors, take these Fourier representations, I rotate it, and then if I obtain a Fourier representation that is similar to the one in my actual image, then I have a match, and that is my resampling factor. I mean, that is a little bit crude. And another thing is, of course, that this paper was super inspiring, but the theoretical foundation for the paper is somewhat flawed, and that is what Matthias Kirchner wrote down. So that was a contribution to the multimedia security NMSEC. Yeah, ACM Multimedia Security Conference in 2008. And if we have a look at the title, it says fast and reliable resampling detection by spectral analysis of fixed linear predictor residue. It sort of indicates already, so in order to compute these residuals, we don't necessarily need to run the expectation maximization algorithm. Because also actually these iterations that takes a while, so it's a slow computation. Yeah. So the way Matthias Kirchner pitches this is that he says, okay, we can be much faster if we understand that it doesn't really matter what these weights A are. You can take any weight here. And that's a quick one because we can skip all the EM stuff and just compute the residuals right away on that image and then need to do some additional processing in order to mark, for example, the area that has been resampled. So, and here you see a little bit the different cultures. So Hani Farid as a computer vision person, like it was very intuitive to him to set up such an such a probabilistic formulation with the EM algorithm, which from his perspective is like a standard tool, a very useful standard tool that can get the job done, and apparently it did. Yeah, Matthias Kirchner, he's a signal processing person, and his approach to things is quite different. Yeah, so he's and it takes quite a while and a lot of equations to argue that, okay, if I look at the variance of my residues and so on, no, they don't really change if I change my kernel. So I can, so in that sense, I don't need to estimate here anything, but I can set it fixed. Yeah, so he's really proving things here on the signals. So here's his theorem one is a backbone of this paper. We don't need to go through it in detail, but and you see, like the whole vocabulary is a different one. Well, I don't know whether you are sensitive to that, but anyway, so he say for white sense stationary signals as chi with da da dum da dum, it holds for arbitrary prediction weights alpha. So that's the same notation as in Hani Farid's and Popescu's paper. Da da dum that. The variance of a signal at position x equals the variance at a signal at position x plus one. And then so he's arguing he's obtaining a periodic signal in any case, and the only thing that he needs to do at the end of the day is figure out whether this is actually like what was the is that a signal of like a trace of resampling and what was the resampling factor and so on and so on. And the actual algorithm is very short. Let me write this down. And we can add a little bit on the theory next time because it's too late today already. So don't get me wrong. I don't mean to say in any way that Hani's work is bad, because actually Hani's work is amazing. It's just that, well, he had a technical mistake there. Okay, it happens. No? They are both great. Matthias Kirchner is also great, actually. Sorry, the algorithm. Or let's first write down, okay, Matthias Kirchner. Showed that the, effective algorithm by Popescu and Farid can be significantly simplified um And that is essentially summarized in these two points. So replace the complex and time-consuming EM estimation of the scalar weights alpha with fast linear filtering with preset coefficients. I forgot what he proposed. I think it was like a maybe like a Laplace kernel or something, a fixed kernel, yeah, and just convolve it with this. You can look this up in the paper. And then second, propose a fast procedure to automatically detect the presence of characteristic peaks in a PMAPS spectrum. Because this brute force template matching approach, it's of course also a little bit clumsy, no? And we can do better than that. So, first, fast computation of the PMAP. So, da-da-dum, a lot of back references. Our modified detector will thus bypass the computationally demanding EM estimation. Didn't write down the kernel, but now I know. I have a printout of this paper as well. Let me look it up. I think it's a Laplace kernel. Ah, no, here's the kernel. It's equation 25. No. 25. What? Okay, sorry. See, my PDF control today is a little bit, naja. Okay, so what are the weights? They sum up to one. And what we have here is we are ignoring the current pixel. We're trying to predict it from its neighborhood. So we're ignoring the current pixel means there's a zero. Yeah. We're trying to predict it from its four adjacent neighbors, and we are sort of suppressing the diagonal neighbors a little bit by assigning a small negative weight here. Yeah, so it's like a little bit like an edge filter or something. Yeah, with this minus here, but the main part is that we're trying to predict that pixel from its direct four neighbors. Yeah, okay, and with that fixed kernel, just convolve the image and apply and put the resulting residuals in an exponential equation to scale the contrast a little bit. That is here, e to the minus residual to the power of something divided by some sigma. And he's just writing, okay, so, you know, like this lambda, tau, and sigma, these are parameters. Choose them in a way such that it works for your application, something like this. So it's just a scaling function. And then the detection of resampling is done. So the goal is to detect these peaks in the Fourier spectrum, yeah? And how is this done? So he proposes to compute what he calls, I'm not familiar with this concept, but what he calls cumulative periodograms. And what this essentially is a cumulative sum in the Fourier space normalized by the overall weight of the coefficients. Let's write this down, and then we are done. So the first thing is use a fixed kernel for example this minus 1/4 1 over 2 minus 1/4 1 over 2, 0, 1 over 2, minus 1 over 4, 1 over 2, minus 1 over 4. And filter the image. Second thing was to apply per pixel or per residual, apply this exponential equation. So scale contrast of the residual with an exponential term. I think we had something like P equals lambda times e to the minus e I find the notation in this paper very unusual, but it may be because I come from a different background. Anyways, so and then the third thing is to compute this cumulative periodogram. And detect a sudden gradient there. So, resampling parameters. Third step. Resampling parameters can be detected as largest gradient in a cumulative periodogram. And so that is in Fourier space. By computing, C of F as the sum over, let's just copy it. The sum over all frequencies that are lower or equal than some frequency f. So we start at the zero frequency and start to sum up these frequency components. And we normalize the result between zero and one. So, or what is b? Is it maybe some cutoff frequency? No, it's really to normalize it between zero and one. So to sum up over all frequencies, yeah? Okay, so that means if we have our frequency domain here, yeah, and if we so we evaluate that function essentially from the center towards the outside, and if we have a significant peak here, then from here to there, sorry, from we have a sudden step here in our cumulative distribution, no? And that is what is detected. The visualization in the paper is unfortunately not so pretty. But here, imagine we are operating on one quadrant of the Fourier domain. We start to add up. And suddenly we cross the peak and our cumulative periodogram, like the values, make a sudden jump, and that is where our parameter was, our resampling. Like the frequency response of that is the result of the resampling operation. Yeah? Does that make sense? I mean, I was jumping a little bit. It was going pretty fast forward. I guess it depends on how familiar you are with like the concept of some periodic structures in frequency domain. Yeah. If not so much, then maybe this was a little bit fast. So we can. I mean, if you have questions now, we can talk about it now, or we can also talk about it next time, if you like. No? So what is the idea in a nutshell? If we have an interpolation operation, yeah, then we can assume that the interpolation weights are periodically are periodic with a certain periodicity, and the exact periodicity depends on the interpolation parameters. Let me show this in the paper by Popescu again. So that is the starting point, and this was all Hani's idea. So here are different examples. Scalings, it's similar for rotation, yeah? And if we look at the periodic structures, so if we have very little upscaling, this periodicity, so the frequency here is lower. If we have larger scaling, then the frequency increases here of these residuals. Yeah? Okay. And for rotation, where's the rotation example? Here are more examples. For rotation, it also looks as if the grid is a little bit rotated. Yeah? Can you see that? Okay. Which leads also to a sort of rotation of the peaks in Fourier domain. Okay. Good. And after that observation, the question is, okay, how can it be exploited? Yeah? And there, apparently, the Popescu and Farid work was a little bit too much of engineering. And Matthias Kirchner showed that It can be very directly been extracted from the image, that signal, by obtaining image residuals with this kernel, for example, scaling the values a little bit such that our signal of interest is in a better range, and then perform a Fourier transform to detect the periodic structures, and for example, use this cumulative periodogram to perform the actual detection. Yeah, good. And then I think a very natural question that comes. Oh, we're over time, right? Sorry. Okay, one more sentence. I think a very natural question that arises here is: can I detect all types of resampling now, like all types of scaling or so, or what are the boundaries of that method? Yeah, I already indicated JPEG compression makes things super complicated, or slightly stronger JPEG compression. Yeah. Like with quality factors of 90 and below, things become difficult. But the other thing is also, if we have cases of strong downsampling, yeah, that is also something that we just can't detect with such an approach as a matter of principle, because there's no interpolation anymore. Consider, for example, an image that you reduce from 9,000 pixels to 3,000 pixels, from 9,000 pixels to 1,000 pixels. So a factor of 3 in X and Y direction. Yeah. If you downsample an image by that amount, it just means you drop 2 out of 3 pixels, but you don't need to interpolate anything. Yeah. You're just dropping because the scaling factor is so strong, no, that you don't need to perform any interpolation, no. So and these are like just natural limitations of that approach, and we just can't find that. Okay, sorry, that was my last sentence. Good. Questions?
Yeah. Why do we have to use this this cumulative periodogram? Because I think it's like taking the integral. Mm-hmm. Looking for the largest gradient, mm-hmm. The integral, mm-hmm. Just the same as looking for the largest
absolute
value of the original function.
Yeah, the problem is the Fourier space doesn't look always as pretty as this, no? But it so oftentimes the way how it actually looks is that we have a lot of action going on here, and then it becomes weaker towards the outside. So, and it could be that the largest values are actually in this range here. But we are not interested in those. But instead we know, okay, there should be, if there is a signal, a resampling, like a periodic signal somewhere, it means that we have a sudden step somewhere in this space. Yeah? So not a smooth fall off of the frequencies, but at some location a sudden step, where we have another signal, and that is what is detected here. Okay, good question. Okay, then thank you. See you next week.